In the realm of memoirs that peel back the curtain on taboo industries, few have generated as much intrigue as Asa Akira's raw confessional, Dirty 30. This unflinching account of life as one of the adult entertainment industry's most recognized performers has become something of a cultural touchstone since its publication. Praised by critics for its brutal honesty and surprising literary merit, the book has found fans in unexpected places, from feminist scholars analyzing its complex take on female sexuality to celebrities like Lena Dunham, who reportedly called it bracingly honest and unexpectedly moving. Beyond the salacious subject matter lies a deeply human story about identity, aging, relationships, and the search for meaning in a world that often reduces performers to one-dimensional fantasies. As we approach Akira's unfiltered reflections on turning 30 while working in an industry that worships youth, we're invited into a world few truly understand, but many secretly wonder about. 1 month and 13 days before her 30th birthday, Asa finds herself waiting for the crisis she's been conditioned to expect. Like anticipating the effects of a hallucinogen, she scrutinizes each mood swing, wondering if this is the beginning of her age-related breakdown. Society has programmed women to approach 30 with dread, to mourn unmet expectations, absent marriage proposals, and the crushing weight of adulthood's responsibilities. The milestone looms particularly large in Los Angeles, where youth is worshipped and aging is treated as a personal failure, especially in the entertainment industry. The real crisis emerges during a weekend feature dancing gig in Philadelphia with her longtime friends Jay and Mike. Between shows at the dimly lit club, scrolling through industry news on her phone, she discovers she hasn't been nominated for Performer of the Year at the AVN Awards, breaking a 5-year streak. This professional rejection triggers what she recognizes as her own version of the 30-year-old crisis, the porn star edition. The news hits harder than expected, a tangible reminder that the industry's appreciation has an expiration date. In a moment of vulnerability, she texts her friend Dee, wondering how much longer she can remain relevant in an industry that fetishizes youth. Dee, who left performing years ago, immediately connects her anxiety to their age, sharing her own experience of aging out of mainstream roles. What makes Asa's situation unique is that her crisis isn't about having accomplished too little by 30, but perhaps too much. 2 abortions, jail time, opiate addiction, countless STDs, multiple marriages, and every form of sex work imaginable. Her resume reads like a cautionary tale, yet she's emerged successful and largely at peace with her choices. Her anxiety stems not from failing to peak, but from peaking too soon. She's already experienced the highest highs and lowest lows: international fame, financial success, drug addiction, recovery, marriage, divorce, and reinvention. What happens when you've lived such an extreme life before 30 that the traditional milestones, marriage, mortgage, children, seem almost quaint by comparison? This question haunts Asa as she approaches her birthday, forcing her to confront not just her age, but her identity beyond the persona she's created. The adult industry, despite its evolution, still operates on a youth-centric model, where performers typically transition to different roles, directing, producing, or leaving entirely as they age. Her colleagues have followed various paths. Some have seamlessly moved behind the camera, others struggle to maintain their relevance, and many have disappeared entirely. The looming milestone becomes a catalyst for examining her choices, relationships, and future in an industry where youth is currency and 30 can mark the beginning of the end, or perhaps, as she hopes, the start of something entirely new. Asa's life is defined by her relationship with desire, both her own and others. On a flight home from a dance gig with her friend Bill, she receives a Twitter message from Keith, a handsome man in a gray hoodie who happens to be on the same flight. After exchanging messages and declining his invitation to sit together, she promises to greet him after landing. During the flight, she purchases Wi-Fi to investigate his profile, discovering he became a quadriplegic in a skydiving accident 12 years earlier at age 21. What follows is a candid exploration of curiosity and attraction. Asa fantasizes about what it would be like to sleep with him, admitting she's always been drawn to first times and has never been with someone in a wheelchair. When they land and meet, Keith is surprisingly blunt, immediately asking if she's ever slept with someone in a wheelchair and assuring her it works with Viagra. He even name-drops another porn star he's been with. Despite his rudeness toward his assistant Roberto and his revelation that he has a fiancé while Asa is married to Tony, she remains intrigued. This encounter illustrates Asa's complex relationship with desire, how it often transcends conventional boundaries and sometimes conflicts with her committed relationship. When she tells her husband Tony about the encounter, he immediately guesses she wanted to sleep with Keith. His understanding of her nature without judgment makes her realize how fortunate she is to have found someone who accepts her completely, including her curiosities and impulses. This pattern of attraction to the unfamiliar appears throughout Asa's life, whether it's her fascination with Keith's disability, her experience with leech therapy, or her adventures in various sexual configurations. She approaches life with an openness to experience that defines her, both professionally and personally. This openness has led to both fulfillment and complications, creating a life rich in stories but sometimes challenging to navigate emotionally. Perhaps the most surprising revelation in Asa's memoir is her detailed plan to eventually kill herself slowly with heroin. She and her best friend Dee regularly revisit and refine this plan, not out of depression or a desire for death, but as control freaks afraid of painful illness or death. This unconventional pact reveals much about how Asa approaches life and mortality. The first person they knew who died outside of elderly relatives was Chris, who overdosed on heroin during their senior year of high school. Unlike their casual weekend experimentation with drugs like ecstasy, acid, and cocaine, Chris had deliberately decided to become a heroin addict, something they found incomprehensible at the time. Years later, Kevin, Asa's first love and Dee's ex, also died from an overdose, the morning of Asa's first shoot with Mandingo. These experiences shaped Asa's relationship with heroin. She's vowed to save it for old age, around 75, as her reward for living life fully. She's shared this plan with others, including her husband, but only Dee seems truly committed. Surprisingly, her mother supports this idea, despite her usual disapproval of Asa's drug use. What makes this plan more than just a morbid fantasy is how it functions as a framework for living. Asa's fear isn't death itself, but dying with regrets. She remembers the panic she felt on OxyContin when she couldn't breathe and feared dying at 21 with no accomplishments. To avoid that panic in her final years, she's determined to do everything she wants beforehand: travel more, reconnect with family in Japan, write more books, have children, and experience everything life offers. This seemingly dark pact actually serves as Asa's North Star for living fully. By planning her end, she's created urgency around her life's goals. The heroin plan functions as both a safety net against an undignified end and a motivator to pack her life with meaningful experiences before that time comes. It's a paradoxical approach to mortality that reveals Asa's pragmatic nature and her determination to live on her own terms right until the end. Though Asa admits she's no relationship expert at 30 with two marriages behind her, her current 4-year relationship with Tony, her longest ever, offers insights into making unconventional partnerships work. The cornerstone of their success? Separate bedrooms. This arrangement began after a violent fight about dishwasher usage that escalated to Asa throwing a Buddha statue at Tony's head. After reconciling, they realized they both preferred sleeping alone. When they later bought a house, they deliberately chose one with enough bedrooms for separate spaces. Each decorated their room differently, taking pride in their individual sanctuaries. They spend evenings together like any normal couple, but at bedtime retreat to their own spaces. This arrangement provides independence while maintaining intimacy. They're excited to see each other each morning rather than growing resentful over snoring or blanket hogging. Asa's other relationship advice includes fighting thoroughly in the first year to establish boundaries, especially regarding their porn careers. picking battles carefully after that initial year, maintaining separate social lives and hobbies, occasionally embracing traditional gender roles like cooking, which Asa discovered makes Tony feel loved, and taking the 5 languages of love test to better understand each other's needs. Their relationship challenges conventional wisdom about what makes partnerships work. They've created a framework that acknowledges their individual needs while fostering connection. For Asa, who has experienced dramatic relationship failures in the past, this balanced approach represents significant growth. She's found a way to be authentically herself, including her high sex drive, her career choices, and her need for independence, while building a stable partnership. This balance extends to how they handle jealousy and boundaries in their work. When Asa learns that Tony's ex-wife might be returning to the industry, her heart races with jealousy. Yet when she confronts Tony, she discovers her agent Spiegler had actually declined to represent the ex-wife out of loyalty to Asa, an unexpected protection of her feelings that deeply touches her. These moments of vulnerability reveal the complex emotional landscape of relationships in an industry where sex with others is part of the job description. Asa's relationship with her body reflects the complex interplay between self-image, sexuality, and the pressures of working in an industry obsessed with physical perfection. 3 days before a gangbang scene with 8 men, she finds herself lying on a massage table with leeches sucking her blood to heal bruises from a fat-freezing procedure. This extreme beauty treatment symbolizes her ongoing battle with body image, a journey from self-acceptance to obsession and back toward a more nuanced relationship with her physical self. Before entering porn, Asa felt comfortable with her appearance. She entered the industry at 130 pounds, feeling confident about her thick physique. However, seeing herself on screen repeatedly led to body dysmorphia. What began with just 5 units of Botox spiraled into an addiction to procedures, workouts, and constant self-improvement. The leech therapy represents just one of many extreme measures she's taken to conform to industry standards. Beyond general body image concerns, Asa shares a deeply personal story about her relationship with her genitals. At 6 years old, she first examined another girl's vagina, her cousin Maya's, and panicked seeing how different it looked from her own. While Maya's was neat with no visible inner labia, Asa's had pieces of skin hanging out. For years, she secretly compared herself to other girls while hiding her own genitals. In middle school, learning about hermaphrodites convinced her that her labia were actually undeveloped testicles. Though boys never seemed to notice anything wrong during her sexually active high school years, she remained convinced her extreme horniness must be due to excess testosterone from being half male. It wasn't until working in porn, examining vaginas up close daily, that she realized hers was completely normal. There were all varieties, some like her cousin's, some like hers, some with larger labia, some lopsided. This journey from shame to acceptance parallels broader themes in Asa's life. Her hormone tests confirmed her testosterone levels were normal, proving she'd spent her adolescence worrying needlessly because society teaches that male sexuality is acceptable while female sexuality isn't, to the point she believed she was physically abnormal. This insight illuminates how deeply cultural messages about female sexuality can damage self-perception, causing women to pathologize their natural desires and bodies. Here's a more TTS-suitable version that maintains the key messages while using more appropriate language. The double standard, reclaiming female sexuality. Throughout her memoir, Asa examines society's conflicting expectations regarding gender and intimacy. Her first encounter with gender-based judgment came in 5th grade, when a classmate used a derogatory term after an innocent playground kiss. The incident left her confused, as she didn't understand the social implications of the word's meaning. Her teenage years brought more complex experiences with social stigma. By 9th grade, her dating experiences led to increased judgment from peers. Initially, she interpreted the attention as positive differentiation until a relationship at 15 helped her understand the negative social implications. Her partner's constant criticism of her past made her question her choices. This pattern of societal judgment continues into her adult life. After an intimate encounter with two male friends, she observes the stark contrast in how society views similar behaviors across genders. While men's experiences are often celebrated or dismissed, women face harsh criticism and moral questioning. When discussing responsibility in complicated situations, she notes how blame often falls disproportionately on women. Ace's analysis of gender dynamics extends to her identity as a woman. She embraces her femininity, appreciating everything from fashion to emotional expression to physical attributes. Her only point of envy regarding men is their freedom from social judgment regarding intimate relationships. This realization influences her career choices, deciding to monetize the judgment she would face regardless. She challenges the notion that certain behaviors are inherently masculine or feminine. Her perspective questions why society accepts male desire while condemning the same in women, despite natural biological drives. As she matures, she increasingly rejects these cultural double standards, choosing authenticity over social conformity. This reclamation of agency represents Asa's most significant statement. By refusing to apologize for her choices or conform to societal expectations, she challenges fundamental assumptions about gender roles and personal autonomy. Her story demonstrates the possibility of self-definition beyond traditional social constraints. Asa's memoir offers rare glimpses into the reality of the adult entertainment industry beyond the fantasies it sells. Being in public with Spiegler, her porn agent, is both the best and worst experience. He's constantly shouting explicit industry talk on his phone, regardless of their surroundings, drawing stares from strangers who are either amused or disgusted. Even when hospitalized, he voice texted about blowbangs and gangbangs in a shared room. These behind-the-scenes moments reveal the business side of fantasy creation. During lunch in Malibu, Asa and Spiegler discuss industry gossip, Bonnie Rotten's pregnancy, Carter Cruz switching to lesbian-only scenes, and discovering an A-list girl from another agency on an escorting site. These conversations highlight how performers navigate career decisions and industry changes, often balancing personal boundaries with professional opportunities. The physical toll of the work becomes evident in Asa's account of a particularly challenging day shooting her showcase movie. That morning started badly when she kicked Tony out of their backyard while cleaning herself for an anal scene. During her solo scene in a Harajuku girl outfit, she used various toys, including glass marbles, in her anus. One marble got stuck inside her and wouldn't come out, forcing a break. When Tony finally texted her that he wasn't mad, the marble suddenly released. During their anal scene together, a bee stung her on the ass cheek, but she insisted on continuing. The scene ended with Tony ejaculating in her eye. These unglamorous moments contrast sharply with the polished final product viewers see. They reveal the physical discomfort, awkward mishaps, and emotional labor that go into creating sexual fantasy. Yet, despite these challenges, Asa finds meaning and even joy in her work. She takes pride in her performances, celebrates her nominations and awards, and values the connections she's formed with colleagues. Her reflections on fellow performers Jessica Drake, Stormy Daniels, and Dana DiArmond show the diverse personalities that make up the industry. Jessica never films without condoms and volunteers building houses in developing countries. Stormy is deliberately provocative but fiercely loyal. Dana presents as a hard-ass but is actually sensitive. These portraits humanize performers, often reduced to one-dimensional objects of fantasy, revealing the complex individuals behind the stage names. As Asa approaches 30, she grapples with integrating the various facets of her identity: daughter, wife, porn performer, writer, friend, potential mother. This struggle manifests most clearly in her relationships with family and in her thoughts about motherhood. While visiting her friend Maya and her newborn son Kai in New York, Asa experiences conflicting emotions. When Maya offers to let her hold Kai, Asa feels both desire and fear. As she awkwardly cradles him, Maya takes a photo, triggering intense guilt in Asa. Just days earlier, she'd been in a blowjob cage for work. Does she deserve to hold this innocent child? Would this photo someday harm him if people knew who she was? Throughout the afternoon, Asa watches Maya mother with natural ease, folding tiny clothes, breastfeeding, burping him. She tries imagining herself doing these things, but struggles to see it. Flying home to LA, she feels certain she'll never have children. She's done too much, been seen by too many. Not that she regrets her career choices, but perhaps this is the trade-off. Yet she can't delete the photo of Kai and herself. Despite her certainty about never having children, she feels a flicker of hope and decides to keep the picture, at least for now. This ambivalence about motherhood parallels her complicated relationship with her parents, particularly her mother. Unlike her friend Peter's deliberate approach to coming out as gay, Asa avoided telling her parents about entering porn, hoping they'd never find out. 6 months in, her mother called devastated after seeing something on television. What followed was 2 years of strained relationship, with her mother constantly questioning what she'd done wrong and why Asa had chosen this path. While her father simply asked if she was happy and accepted her answer, her mother couldn't comprehend her choice. Asa regrets not controlling how her mother discovered her career. If she'd been honest from the beginning, rather than letting her find out accidentally, perhaps her acceptance would have come sooner. 8 years later, their relationship has healed, though they still don't discuss her work in detail. Her mother has slowly accepted that this makes Asa happy, seeing she's healthy and responsible. These relationships reveal Asa's ongoing struggle to integrate the various parts of herself. Can she be both a porn performer and a mother? A dutiful daughter and an adult film star? As she approaches 30, these questions become more pressing, forcing her to confront the long-term implications of her choices and how they shape her identity and relationships. As Asa's 30th birthday arrives on January 3rd, she celebrates quietly with morning croissants in Beverly Hills, proud to have reached this milestone without Hello Kitty tattoos, sex offender registrations, or cavities, though she's had chlamydia like 6 times. She's honored to be selected as AVN's keynote speaker, a rare distinction for performers, though nervous about writing her speech. This quiet celebration contrasts with the anxiety she felt approaching the milestone. Her reflections throughout the memoir reveal how 30 functions as a moment of reckoning, a time to assess the past and consider the future. She's accomplished more than most by this age, though not in conventional ways. Her achievements include surviving addiction, building a successful career in a challenging industry, finding a stable relationship with Tony, and developing her voice as a writer. Yet questions about the future linger. In her letter to Gonzo Porn, she admits to missing the intensity and raw sexuality of her earlier work, despite enjoying the stability and status of her current contract with Wicked Pictures. She wonders whether staying in Gonzo Porn would have allowed her to have a family or kids, as it was all-consuming, controlling her emotions and thoughts. Though she's supposedly outgrown that phase of her life, sometimes she still thinks about what she left behind. This tension between past and future, between different versions of herself, defines Asa at 30. She's both proud of her journey and uncertain about what comes next. Her most profound insight may be that the traditional milestones by which we measure life, marriage, children, career advancement, take on different meanings when your path has been unconventional. Success becomes more personally defined, less about meeting external expectations, and more about living authentically. As she looks ahead, Asa seems determined to continue defining success on her own terms. Whether that means continuing in the adult industry, focusing more on writing, or eventually exploring motherhood, she approaches the future with the same openness and honesty that have characterized her first 30 years. Her journey reminds us that life rarely follows a predictable path, and that finding meaning often requires embracing rather than denying our complexities and contradictions.